This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Clive Ball.
Very good morning to you. I'm Clive Bull here on LBC. Boxing Day morning already, and I'm here till five. Lots coming up later on. We're going to focus in this hour on technology and trying to make it as simple as possible, even if you're not a techie. And the person who's going to help me do that is Fevzi Turkalp, who joins me now, technology expert from GadgetDetective.com. Fevzi, good morning to you.
Morning to you. Belated Merry Christmas.
Yes, and to you. I mentioned earlier on that, in a way, for unfortunate reasons, technology has become the big thing this year. We've been doing things technologically that we never thought we would do. And I know that something like Zoom, for example, which is everywhere now, it's been around for a long time, but suddenly Zooming has become the norm. Do you think that a lot of these things are here to stay now?
I think they are, because, first of all, people have the knowledge. Often these apps would be sitting on our smart devices, but we never knew how to use them and weren't inclined to do so. But now we know what we can do with them. I don't think that would ever go away. And also, a lot of businesses are saying, you know what, this working from home thing kind of works. We're going to take less office space and we will trust our staff to work diligently from their homes. So some people will remain like that. And a lot of the big tech giants have said that, for example. So I think it will do. And those services will get better, and our internet connections will get better, and the software will get better, and it will not replace face-to-face meetings, but I think it's a valuable tool now, just in the way that, you know, the telephone is, for example.
And a lot of people, I think, need to look at the tech that they've got. I think there was a real panic back in sort of March when the first lockdown happened. I know I had this happen myself, that I suddenly needed to do a lot more work at home, and get the laptop out, which I hardly ever used, and it wasn't up to the job. In fact, it broke. And worse than that, I couldn't get it mended because nobody was open. Nowhere was open. They weren't even accepting laptops to fix. And I needed it very quickly. I had to buy a new one in the end. And also, a lot of people, I think, found the webcams were all doing this Zooming and so on, and you couldn't buy, for about 3 weeks, you couldn't buy a webcam. They were being bought up all over the place.
Much, much longer than 3 weeks.
Really?
There's still constrained supply, and prices have gone up. So webcams that I bought, say a Logitech C920, which is, you know, one of the better ones, and I used to buy them every now and then when they came up on deals on, you know, well-known websites. I'd buy them for about £30 to £40. They're currently selling for over 100.
Yeah, so, I think I had to pay £100 for something that I'm sure was probably worth about £25.
Well, you know, it's worth what someone needs to pay for it, isn't it?
But exactly.
So I guess the problem is that there's been a shift away from laptops towards tablets and smartphones, which is great for personal use. But in a lot of cases, it's hard to... there are cases where you can run a business from a tablet, but it's not easy because it doesn't have its own keyboard built in, and it sometimes just doesn't have the apps that you need, you know, proper filing system and so forth. So we then went back to our laptops and found that they were, you know, at least 3 or 4 years old and older in many cases, and that they were just too slow. So that's one of the things I thought about, was I thought, well, you know, people don't necessarily at this time have a shed load of money to spend. It might be that you have to buy a new laptop, a new device, and we'll come to that. But actually, the two things that you can normally do to a laptop to help it is either upgrade the RAM memory, which is like the working memory where the programs run from, or update the hard disk drive. And if the machine is 3 or 4 years old, it's probably got an old-fashioned physical rotating hard disk drive inside it, where there's a little platter spinning away inside it. And those things will fail. It's not a question of if they fail, it's a question of when they will fail. And they are slow. And for a machine which is generally slow, to have a slow hard disk is fairly catastrophic. So the two things that you can look at doing is either increasing the RAM, the memory, or change the hard disk drive to something called a solid state drive. That's like, does the same job, but no moving parts. So it uses less energy, which means you get more battery life out of your laptop. It doesn't generate as much heat, which means that the fans don't have to power up, which means it's quieter, and again, more battery life. And if you drop it, it's far more likely to survive because there's no moving parts. So these are great things, but the difficulty that people have is how to choose, how to know what to choose to put in into the machine. And there are many brands, but one that I use personally and that I like is something called Crucial, which is a brand owned by Micron. Micron are one of the sort of biggest manufacturers of memory and components in the world, but they have this brand called Crucial. And they have an online scanner which scans your machine when you go onto their website and tells you exactly which RAM upgrades and SSD upgrades are compatible. And if for any reason it's wrong and you get it and it's not compatible, then you get a full refund. And that really takes the risk and a lot of the pain out of upgrading. And it will tell you, this is much how much RAM you've got in the machine, this is how much it can take, and this is what you can buy to put that in there. And a RAM upgrade is quite simple to do. It's usually just a matter of sort of unscrewing a flap on the underside of the machine and popping in two sticks and pushing them down with your finger. And that's...
You know. Really? So it is something you could do yourself?
Yeah, it is. And if you're not confident, it's the sort of thing that you can pay someone, you know, £50 to do and do an SSD upgrade at the same time. And whilst you're putting in a new hard disk drive or solid-state disk drive, it's probably, if you've got an older machine, it might still be running Windows 7. Now, Windows 7 hasn't been supported by Microsoft for a long time now, which means that every day it's more vulnerable to being hacked and attacked. So this is also a good opportunity if you are running Windows 7. When you get the new SSD, instead of just trying to transfer everything over, take the opportunity to upgrade to Windows 10. And a little tip for you, a lot of Windows 7 users can get a free upgrade to Windows 10, even though Microsoft tell you that the offer is over and has been over for a couple of years. If you've got your product key for your existing version of Windows, you can go to the Microsoft website, download a version of Windows, give it your product key, and it will accept it in most cases and give you a licensed copy of Windows 10. And Windows 10, I mean, I must admit, I'm not a great fan of, but at least it is supported. You know, that's to say that when there is a vulnerability or bug discovered in the software, Microsoft will fix it and won't leave you vulnerable. Whereas with Windows 7, as more and more deficiencies and bugs come to light about Windows 7, they're not being fixed. And therefore, the likelihood of being hacked increases day by day.
So, Fancy Turkups here, and if you've got a question about technology, then you can call in 0345 6060 973. If you've got a question, don't worry if you think it's a simple question. The simpler, the better. We want to keep it as simple as possible. Whatever your question about technology, if you're wondering about maybe upgrading, buying a new gadget of some kind, something that doesn't work, then call us and get some advice. What tends to happen, as I said earlier, is we do get a lot of... I think people interested in technology love texting and tweeting because we're getting a lot of questions in already on text. And the text is 84850, or you can tweet at LBC. And here's a quick question for you straight away from Mike, who says, Clive, my question is, I was given an Amazon Alexa Echo Dot device as a Christmas present. I've set it up using the app download, my Amazon account details, so my voice is recognised. Yeah. Am I charged a monthly usage fee from Amazon, as I've not signed any form of contract?
No, not at all. It's just another device that attaches to the internet. It's got certain features built into it, as if you'd bought, you know, a tablet from them, for example. It has that capability. All you pay is for your internet connection that you pay for anyway, and the electricity that it uses. If you are an Amazon Prime user, or if you for example buy Audible books, you know, the Audible brand, which is Amazon.
I love Audible,
and it can read them to you. And also, if you buy Kindle eBooks, it will do text to speech to read the text based book, and that's great. And I to be honest, I very rarely read physical books anymore. I have them read to me when I'm out walking.
But is that read by... I like the ones that are read by actors. Are you saying that it will read like in the computer voice?
It will do both. So if it's an audible book, which is a recording by a voice actor or the author, it will read that. But actually, the Echo units from Amazon have got some of the best text-to-speech available, better than Apple, and in some cases better than the Google devices as well. So, of course, you can still tell it's a mechanical voice, but it's not quite as grating as some of the others. It is actually quite listenable. And the alternative for me is, you know, unconscionable, me actually having to open a book and read it. Goodness sake, I wouldn't do that. But you know, reading and listening, I never know what's the right word. Do you read an audiobook or do you have it read to you? Or
I listen to an audiobook.
I suppose it is. Okay.
Yeah. So although I feel I've read the book at the end of it, exactly. You know, because after 14 hours,
Difficulty I have with them, and the feature I'd like to see them built in, is something that detects when you fall asleep. And if it could do that and then pause at that point, then I wouldn't have to try and work out at what point I fell asleep during the playback of the book, because typically I may fall asleep, wake up a bit, fall asleep, and then you think, well, that bit's familiar, but I didn't get the bit before.
Was it chapter 14 or 15?
So you end up going back a couple. So there's certain chapters that I would have heard 4, 5, 6 times.
You're right. I've done exactly the same thing. In fact, I think I've been in a permanent loop where I fall asleep. The next day, I think, I'll have to go back a bit. And then I fall asleep at the same bit again. And then the next day, I have to go back a bit again.
But it is good, and they also have...
I never get to the end of the book.
There's sort of relaxation things and so forth.
Fantastic,
I would say, by the way, you know, a lot of these people who do apps like Calm and Balance and so forth like that for relaxation, meditation. Headspace, yeah. A lot of them have got free deals at the moment, not particularly for things like frontline workers in the NHS, but actually a lot of them will give it to you at certain times anyway, because, you know, we're all a bit stressed with COVID, and it's a way of sort of keeping yourself together. And I've actually benefited from those. I think that they're excellent. And it's something to look at, because I'm not sure I'd necessarily... If I was having money problems, I wouldn't necessarily want to pay, say, £80 for an annual subscription to one. But if it's free, or at least if there's a free period or some of the content is free, I think it's a really good thing to try. You know, we should all try and help ourselves whichever way we can. But to come back to the question, no, absolutely, they don't charge you a fee. They view these devices and they sell them at either no cost or, I suspect, sometimes below cost, because they are a platform upon which you can consume their services. And therefore, you know, if we didn't buy these things, I mean, it's a sort of secret, but if we didn't buy them, they'd have to give them to us.
Yeah.
Frankly.
And it's your tech questions between now and 3. 50 Turkalps here from gadgetdetective.com. If you've got a question about any aspect of technology, even not just computers, it could even be vacuum cleaners, couldn't it, Fevzy?
At a push, if you find the pun, yes.
lots of questions on text as well, 84850. Here's a quick one here. I'm looking for a good antivirus product for my laptop. I'm concerned about it slowing everything down, though, being resource-heavy or clashing with other software. What can you suggest, says Sandra? Antivirus products.
Yeah. Okay, well, Sandra, well done you for realising that it's a good idea to have that sort of protection. So the first question that I guess one has to answer is, should one go for one of the free ones or one of the paid-for ones? My belief is that it's one of the things that is worth paying for, but having decided to pay for it, I can give you some advice on how to get the best deal on the paid for stuff. And it's just too critical to leave to the free stuff. And I think that in some cases there are also some security concerns about how the providers of free software are making their money, so you have to sometimes tread carefully. Of the ones that I have used that I have found to be effective and efficient in the way that you say, that don't slow down machines, the Norton 360 products I found to be uniformly good in terms of performance, but also not slowing the machine down. Also, there is a brand called ESET, that's ESET, also very good, highly configurable. So if you're a bit of a techie, you can you've got more things that you can twiddle, as it were, but even out of the box it works very well. And the last one that I found to be technologically good, and again not too heavy on resources, is Kaspersky with a K. Some people are a bit concerned about Kaspersky because they worry that it's got Russian connections, and do we really want that in our security? That's above my pay grade, frankly. But as far as the software is concerned, I found it to be good and not a memory hog. I think that, you know, particularly with more modern machines with solid state drives and, you know, enough RAM memory inside them, so it harks back to what we were saying before, most machines don't really suffer very much, you know, with that. But some are worse than others. I won't name the bad ones, but I've given you three that I believe to be good.
Okay. I always have Macs. I tend to be an Apple person. And traditionally, they used to say, well, you don't need to bother so much with Macs. Is that true, or should I be putting stuff on as well?
That would always make me so angry when I used to have Apple, in quotes, geniuses telling me, I used to do this thing of, you know, like Mystery Shopper, where you go in and just pretend you don't know about the devices and see what information and advice they give you. And to a man and to a woman, they would tell me that I didn't need antivirus on a Mac. That's just not true. There's not really much in it in terms of inherent security between Windows and Apple. At least there wasn't. And we'll come on to why Apple have sort of become a bit more secure lately. But the reason why Apple devices and Apple users were safer is because they were 5% of the PC market would be running Mac OS. So if you're writing a piece of software designed to scam someone out of their money, are you going to write it for the 95% of users, or are you going to specialize in the 5%? Right. There are some for the 5%, because they tend to be.
Is it still 5% now?
It's about 7% at the moment.
Okay.
I think it's going to go up for reasons that we'll discuss later. But it's about 7%. It's always bobbled around there. I don't think, in the same way that Rolls-Royce never really want to be, you know, market leaders, they just want to sell their sort of niche products at a high profit margins, which is what Apple do very successfully. So I think that even though they were in the 5% and therefore had the protection of relative obscurity, I still think that, you know, there is malware that runs on Mac OS, which is what Macintosh computers run, and also on iOS. So there's malware that can still get through on iPads and iPhones as well. Apple do a good job of pre-vetting apps that go up, but it's not just about apps, you see. It's also about what you do through the browser.
Okay.
And so you can be unsafe in that way. So, yes, still get your security software.
All right, lots of questions coming in. Let's take some calls. Susan in Newbury. Hello, Susan.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to say?
My problem is, my husband used to deal up with all my computers and he died. And now I'm stuck. I tried to update the Windows and I've made a dog's dinner of it. I'm stuck and I don't know how to get out of it. And what I want to need to know is, how can I find somebody to come and help me?
Okay.
What do I look for? What kind of an engineer
good question,
whatever?
Especially at the moment.
It's a very good question, and it's not always an easy one to answer. I mean, what I would say to you, first of all, is if you're looking to pay someone, try and get a personal recommendation. Try and get someone who's had their machine fixed or upgraded and they were happy with the service, because you're putting a lot of trust in them. For one thing, you're trusting them to do a good job of fixing it. For another thing, you're trusting them with the data on your device, that they're not going to look around and make copies of it and, you know, steal or anything like that. And I'm obviously most engineers wouldn't do that, but it has been known. So recommendation is the best way forward. Can I just ask what you were trying to upgrade at the time, just in case there's anything I can help you with? Was it?
Well, it came up that my Windows needed updating.
Mm-hmm.
And the trouble was, I didn't know some of my passwords because my husband did it all.
Yeah.
And now it's just coming up that it's unlicensed.
Yeah, okay. And do you know if you're running Windows 7 or Windows 10, perhaps?
I haven't got a clue.
Yeah, okay, it's fair enough. I mean, I wouldn't know what sort of engine was in the bonnet of my car, under the bonnet of my car, so, you know, I think that's quite fair. Look, you know, the thing is, some of the large names that you might have heard of, I wouldn't necessarily recommend, and I don't want to name them because they're not here, but I would go for a independent, I would try and get a recommendation. You know that there are websites like nextdoor.co.uk. They're sort of community websites of people who are in your local area, you know, within a few streets of you. You can actually, if your machine is working, you can register for free with nextdoor.co.uk, and you can ask that question, because what you really want is a local person who, if necessary, can come and pick up the machine from you. It is sometimes possible to fix these things remotely, but often it's better if they can take the machine from you, and obviously ask them what sort of COVID measures they're putting in place, because the only alternative to that is to buy another machine. And then even if you do that, who's going to transfer all that data across for you if there's things on the old machine that you want? What I would also say to you, Susan, is that when you are, you know, ask for opinions, and ask for, you know, for people who've actually got testimonials and so forth, ask them for references as well. You know, they should be able to give you the names of, you know, two or three happy customers, as it were, that you can speak to. So it's worth doing that research. Then ask them to, you know, update your machine, but I would also ask them to put into place a backup regimen for you, so that if your machine were to die at some point or develop a fault, that you don't lose, you know, any photos on there. I mean, you know, there might be very valuable photos in there, valuable to you, you know, maybe family members and so forth. There may be a novel that you've been working on for 6 years that you don't have a copy of, and if it were to go, everyone should ask themselves the question, if my machine were to disappear or die today, what would I lose, and what might be the effects of losing what's on that machine? Would I, if I'm a business, would I be unable to render invoices? Would I be losing thousands of pounds? You know, and get them to help you with a backup solution as well.
Definitely. We should all be doing that, really, shouldn't we?
We should. We should. And yeah. And I speak as someone who's been caught out myself in the past. So, you know, it's something to do. But Susan, if you're not sure, by the way, if you get a couple of names, you know, and you're not sure about them, then I think through the station you can probably get a message to me. I'd be happy to you know, just have a chat with
Absolutely.
Them and just make sure that I'm happy.
Drop me an email, Susan, and I will pass it on to Fevzi.
And then whoever it is will know that they're being watched.
Yeah, absolutely. we'll keep an eye on them. Susan, thank you very much. Let's go to Ian in Galloway. Hello, Ian. What would you like to say?
Hello, mate.
Hi.
Hi, Ian.
I was wanting to ask you, have you ever run a Linux box?
I personally don't run Linux boxes. I have done, and I've run sort of Raspberry Pis and so forth, which is, you know, Varian. I'm increasing. It's a very timely question, you know, because it's as Windows becomes more and more like malware, in my opinion. You know, where it just steals
type platform.
Sorry, say again.
A Facebook type platform
on Linux? No.
No, Windows.
I see. Yeah. No, I understand what you mean. For years, Microsoft was critical of Google for monetizing its clients' data. And Microsoft was making money out of selling operating systems, essentially, and a few applications. And then one day it woke up in a world where everyone was giving away their operating system. So Mac OS comes with Macintoshes, iOS comes with Apple devices, Android comes free with Android phones. No one was selling operating systems, and Microsoft became the odd one out. So having taunted Google for years and said how despicable their practices were, they proceeded to do exactly the same thing with Windows 10, such that it's almost impossible to run Windows 10 with all its features without sending telemetry home, in other words, information about you and your use of the computer and the browser, back to them. You can't even get the voice activation to work without telling it where you are. So I really think that, I've been a Windows user for a long time. I've used Macs as well, just because, you know, some things work better on a Mac. But I'm now at the point where for the first time, I'm seriously thinking of giving up Windows and either going to Mac OS or a variant of Linux.
What is it you've got against Windows at the moment then? What is it you're worried about?
What Windows does at the moment is it sends data about your use of the computer back to Microsoft.
Does it?
And even when you are aware of the fact and you try and disable all of that, first of all, you can't disable all of it. And then secondly, with almost every update, they seem to undo what you've done. And if you try and block it by installing a firewall, because they own the operating system, they disable your firewall for the purposes of sending data back to themselves.
Wow, that does sound a bit cheeky.
Yeah, and this is from the company, by the way, who, remember, when they were desperate for everyone to go onto Windows 10, which is, by the way, why they stopped Windows 7 support when they did, because people were happy with Windows 7 and they had to force them out of Windows 7, that people were waking up in the morning, switching on their machine, and find that the machine that they'd gone to sleep with as a Windows 7 machine was a Windows 10 machine without their consent and approval, and often was even being bricked, that's to say rendered unusable because the update had gone wrong, the update that people hadn't knowingly consented to. And that sort of practice, it makes me feel, it's not that Apple are angels, they're not, none of these companies are angelic, but it just makes me feel that actually I don't really want them being inside,
collecting all your data, controlling your computer.
This data seems innocuous, it just doesn't seem very important until you realise that when they put it all together, the total is greater than the sum of the parts in terms of what they can see about you. I mean, it's like when they say Google knows... Well,
and just to explain to people this Linux thing, that this is why some people turn to that. I can see people tweeting saying, yes, Linux equals freedom. Yeah. So I don't know whether that's true, but that's the issue, is it?
So Linux is an operating... By the way, Mac OS was originally based on Linux, which is why it's a relatively solid operating system. Linux is a free operating system. It comes in what are called various distributions, which are various similar versions of the same thing. It is free to use. It is very powerful. It is very stable. The difficulty is that it's arguably not quite as friendly to use as Windows, and it doesn't have the same degree of ubiquity of common software for it. So you can get Linux versions of word processors and spreadsheets and so forth, but you won't get Microsoft Office on there, not from Microsoft themselves, and you won't get the tools that you're familiar with on Windows. So Microsoft has the advantage of being the incumbent in this. But if they continue to push people in the way that they are, I predict that some of them will jump to Apple and some of them will jump to Linux.
All right. Ian, thank you for that. Fez is with us and we'll take some more calls shortly. LBC, we're talking about technology in this hour. Fevzi Turkalp is here from GadgetDetective.com taking your questions, and lots of questions coming in, as it turns out. Clearly, there is a lot of appetite for some tech advice. I'll just whiz through a few of these text questions for you, Fevzi. One here, I have a new MacBook Air 2020, and I find the camera is really poor on Zoom. I found a lot of complaints about it online. Is this a bug? I must say, I've got a MacBook, and I do find that for some reason the cameras are not very high spec.
Beggar's belief when you consider you pay £1,000 plus for a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro, and they put a camera in it which is akin to a potato. It has the optical finesse of a potato. It's a 720p camera in that particular machine, which means that it's not even full HD. In this day and age, that's outrageous. It's not a bug in that it's a limitation of the hardware that they're built in. Part of the reason why they do it is because Apple sometimes places more importance on form rather than function. And because it is such a svelte lid, there isn't much space to put a decent webcam in it. The webcams in the iPhones and iPads are immeasurably better, or actually measurably better. And it's a real shame. And and they made a big deal this year of the fact that they were using their artificial intelligence to make the potato camera look slightly less potato-esque. and to a degree, that it is improved. But to quote an engineer, you can change the laws of physics. If you put a potato in, you're not going to get pristine images. And the only really, really good way around that then is to plug in a webcam into one of the into one of the very few USB ports on the device. So you
exactly. Yes, I had to do that, and that wasn't easy either.
No, and at that point it becomes because you end up using a hub, because they don't give the 2020 machines have got two USB 4/Thunderbolt connectors on it, and both of them on the one side. By the way, and when you consider that's how you power it, it means that you can only power it from a cable that enters on the left, which is not always convenient, but If you get a hub, you know, then you can get a plethora of ports and just have one lead plugged into the side of the machine and power it and attach all these other things from there. But it just becomes a lot less svelte when you've got a whodging great webcam hanging off the top of the camera.
Yeah. Simon's in Southampton. Hello, Simon.
Morning.
Morning. What would you like to say?
Okay, so I have just got myself a new computer. Well, not new, but new to me.
Mm-hmm.
It does everything I wanted to do, but I'm now looking at getting into games. Now, the current computer I have has got an i5 processor, which is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking of an upgrade. So the questions I've got are, I obviously need to replace the processor and the graphics card. Are they plug and play, or do I have to get my soldering iron out? That's the first thing. The second thing is there anything else I need to upgrade or replace? And are things like AMD processors the same connections as the i5s, i8s, etc.?
Okay. All right, Simon, some very good questions. Let me ask you a question before we get into it. How old is the machine that's new to you?
I think what it is there's various different companies on eBay.
Yeah.
And they make up to your spec from hodgepodges of different size. I think, for example, the case that it's in is probably about 10 years old, but the bits and pieces inside are ranging in different ages, but I know it's an iPhone. Okay. And I think the answer is it's all different.
Okay, so what I'm getting at is that the infrastructure of the machine, that's to say the motherboard and how fast the memory can move bits of data around the board, is important here, because even if you spend money, if the machine, let's say, has a motherboard that's sort of 4 or 5 years old, for example, and the processor would then be of that generation for it to fit into that motherboard. Yeah, it won't be a modern processor if the motherboard is old. Then, whatever you do in terms of processing and graphics, you will always be limited by the underlying constraints of the technology that they plug into. So I would look carefully into what is the age of that motherboard and the processor. If it's like 3, 4, 5 years old, I would consider not spending a lot of money. You could make improvements probably still, but you know, are you going to get a good return on your investment? Because it's going to be hassle. There'll be a lot of work. The main thing with games, most games will benefit most from a graphics card upgrade.
Right.
Particularly if the processor, which you said an Intel i5, if it's using what are called integrated graphics, that's to say the graphics are built into the processor, then those are notoriously poor, and almost any graphics card will give you an improvement. But by the time you spend the money on a decent graphics card and work out which graphics card will work, work out which processor will work and whether that will give you any boost, and if I were to do it, I would go for the graphics card first and see if that solves it, because often the slowness is to do with the graphics rather than the processor itself.
Yeah.
I would look into those, but you might be better looking at either a modern machine. It might be cheaper than upgrading an older machine, or perhaps even a games console. The games consoles are good value to buy. Unfortunately, the games for them are expensive. But I would just counsel caution, because if it's an older machine, you're going to struggle to run top of the range modern titles, because gaming is one of the most stressing things you can do to a machine. A machine can be great for business. You can even edit videos on it and audio and all sorts of things, but when it comes to gaming, that's the thing that's going to test the metal of your machine more than anything else that you can do with it. So I really counsel you to do your research carefully before you start spending money on graphics cards.
There's a lot of people are agreeing with you, Fevzi, on this one, so Simon, I think probably heed that advice. There's various people on Twitter all going along with that advice. Thank you, Simon. Lots of questions coming in. Let's go to Jeff in Swansea. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, guys. And
morning.
Fevzi, hope you had a good Christmas.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You
yes. What would you like to say?
So I want to pick your brains. I've had a problem with my son. He does the online gaming quite a lot.
Yep.
And we had an issue before Christmas. He got something called DDoSed. Don't ask me what that means. All I know, it created absolute havoc with the internet. What can I do? Well, typical teenager, not let me look at his computer, X, Y, and Z. What can I do to make sure that he doesn't get DDoSed again or whatever that means? He plays one of those, it's called Habbo, which is like a internet virtual game. You know, you have your little character. But when this happened, it caused absolute manic and mania in the house for about 3 days because we couldn't get the internet working.
Yeah. So a DDoS is a distributed denial of service attack. It's a type of attack that is normally mounted against servers, which are usually businesses, but not always. And so if he's got some sort of game server or even just an online presence, a denial of service attack is where people run programs that contact your son's machine and request information from it. And they do it with such frequency that the machine is overwhelmed and collapses under the strain. That's a denial of service attack. So that's often done for someone that wants to crash, a ticketing website or an airline website or something like that. They can overwhelm the site. And in the same way, your son's machine could be overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. And it's called a distributed denial of service attack because what they do is they get all different computers that they've compromised previously, who they have control of, to attack your son's computer or server all at once. So that's somewhat unusual for it to happen to a non-business entity, but it can happen. There are not great defenses against DDoS attacks because even businesses often have to have full-time staff just trying to protect themselves against these attacks, and it's very difficult. I mean, what I would say is if he's able to change his IP address, that's to say the address of his machine on the internet, so that and try and cloak that, then perhaps he may just move away from them, and they may not try to follow him and find him and do that. I would also ask, and it's hard if your son is not talking to him about this, but if there's anything that he's done that maybe has raised the ire of individuals, that they felt it sensible to do this to him. Once a machine is attacked in that way and it crashes, the machine is potentially vulnerable when it restarts because it's possible to insert malware into a machine such that when it crashes and comes back up again, that they can actually get control of the machine as well. That can happen. So I think it's very difficult. I mean, this is as much a parenting issue as it is a technical one, I think. I think you need to speak to your son because he will be able to tell you much more about what's happened and why. And the question is whether he'll share that information with you.
All right, Jeff, thank you. More in a moment. LBC, Fevzi Turkalps here. LBC, I'm Clive Bull. We're talking technology at the moment. And the editor of GadgetDetective.com is with us. Fevzi Turkalp is here. Let's take some more questions. Turns out it's very busy on the phones. So let's go to Susan in Peckham. Hello, Susan.
Oh, hello.
Hello. What would you like to say?
Well, I'm a shoulder surfer, I think I'd like to call myself.
Fair enough.
I've learnt Windows at our local library.
Oh, well done.
And I've been using other people's computers, and I'm not online. I'm totally starting from scratch. I quite fancy having a desktop. Mm-hmm. I want to do my memoirs.
I understand.
And I wonder what's the best sort of set of equipment for that. Okay. I have a printer with it, of course, obviously.
I understand, Susan. So when you say a desktop, is this because you know that you're going to use that computer only in that one location, in that one room in your house?
I'm going to set up a little sort of spot.
Yeah, so you're not...
Where I can have the desktop and the printer.
You're not wanting to sit on the sofa or tuck up in bed with a laptop?
No, I won't be doing that, no.
Okay, fine.
I want the keyboard. I wouldn't mind having a loose keyboard.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, I understand. So I think you've chosen wisely, because if you don't need the mobility, then a desktop can be a better choice, because first of all, it gives you a lot more flexibility, and it means the machine will last longer because you can upgrade it more easily. And if, for example, your keyboard were to go wrong, you can just plug in another keyboard. If the screen were to die, you can just plug in another screen. It's modular, and that's great. And you can put the actual desktop unit, although it's called a desktop, you can put it on the floor and under the desk out of the way. So it doesn't have to take up a lot of space. And because you're going to be writing, you can get yourself a nice keyboard as well. So in terms of what to buy, I guess, is, I guess, did you have a sum of money in mind? In terms
I haven't really. Money within reason is no object.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I would look at possibly a Dell machine would give you quite a lot of choices.
I think they had Dell in the library, actually.
Yeah, I mean, they're very common machines. I mean, I say them because they used to say no one ever got fired for buying IBM, and it's kind of a bit like that with Dell, that it's a fairly safe bet, although bear in mind that all brands have got good and bad machines within them. I would think about the size of the screen. I know that sometimes, I know that my eyesight, for example, isn't as good as it once was. So I have the luxury of a nice 27-inch monitor on my desk, which means that it doesn't have to be great high resolution, but it means I can sit quite a long distance away from it and still see it comfortably. And again, that's one of the
27-inch monitor.
That I wouldn't go that large necessarily, but the point is, if you had it in a laptop format, you might be limited to 13 or 16 inches, whereas with desktop you can easily go above 21 inches and have a nice slim monitor on your desk. I would do that. If I were to go for an Intel based machine, that's to say one with a processor built by Intel, then I would go for an i5 based processor. So if it's an
i5.
Yeah, so it goes i3, i5, i7, i9.
Oh, I see.
As the number goes up, the chip gets more powerful. I would go i5, possibly even an i7. I know this isn't all going to make sense to you now at the moment, but when you're going through it, Susan, you can dazzle people you're talking to.
I haven't heard it. Yeah. I didn't know anything about i5 or i7.
So I would say get something that's got a quad-core processor. That's to say it's got four processors on the chip. That means it can do a lot of things at the same time without slowing down. You know how earlier in the hour we were talking about how antivirus can slow down a machine? But if you've got one with more cores on it, for example, four-core processor, then it can do that in the background without, breaking a sweat. In terms of the amount of RAM memory, from machine being bought new, and particularly if budget is not a concern, I would go for either 8 gigabytes or 16 gigabytes. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then I would go for one that contains a solid-state drive, sometimes known as an SSD, and I would make sure that machine had no less than 500 gigabytes of storage on it, and 1,000 would be better.
Yeah.
Okay. That will mean it will be fast, and it will also mean that it will have plenty of space for you to store whatever you want on it. So documents that you type will hardly take up any space at all. But if you were to, for example, start using it to store photos or downloading videos and watching them on there, then you will have the space to grow into it. Don't buy something that just does what you need today. Think about it maybe running without needing to be upgraded for 3 or even 4 years.
Okay, Susan, good luck, and good luck with the memoirs as well. Thank you very much. Let's go to Charles in Croydon. Hello, Charles.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning. What would you like to say?
I've got a new router from EE.
Yeah.
But the problem is, the old one was connected, or partly connected, hardwired, to a Windows 98 PC. I know that's 20-odd years old.
Mm.
Now, the new router won't find it. The old router found it, no problem at all.
The older
router is only a couple of years old, but the new router just doesn't find it.
Yeah, so when you say it doesn't find it, you mean it doesn't find it wirelessly on Wi-Fi?
No, it doesn't find it hardwired.
Oh, even when you plug it in, and you're plugging in presumably through the Ethernet ports.
That's right. I've spoken to EE, and I'll be honest, they just told me that it's not compatible, but to me that just sounded like an easy way out.
Yeah, it may be both, actually. it may be that the firewall that you're running is stopping the two devices communicating with each other, and there's a firewall built into that, and it may be that so routers use things called ports to communicate out, with the outside world. And it may be that the port is being blocked by the firewall. The problem with that is fixing that is kind of tricky if you're not adept. I would say, I would, what you can do, you see, it's strange because when you plug it in, it should just see it if it's a wired connection. And what you should be able to do is go to a web page, which is the settings of the router, and allow it to make sure that everything is set up correctly. I think ultimately you should go back to EE. I don't think it's good enough just to say it's incompatible, because even if it were, it should still see it. It should still recognize it as being, you know, another
get them
computer
to come round, maybe.
The alternative you could try is to try and do it wirelessly. But I would say to you that the difficulty is also, I mean, leaving aside your current problems, that machine is very unsafe. It's very insecure. We've mentioned how, you know, even Windows 7, which is a much more recent operating system, is insecure. And the weakest part of your internet connection at home is the Achilles heel of everything. So if you've got other devices, you know, once they get into one thing, they can look around your network and steal information.
Really, Charles should be looking at
I'm not saying that EE shouldn't be fixing it, but you see, any machine that's got that version of Windows on it will not be a machine that I would advise you to try and run Windows 10 on anyway. I mean, you might technically manage it, but it wouldn't be a good experience, and it's not one that I would recommend. I really think that, you know, if it's something that you're connecting to a router, and therefore it's by definition it is at risk, I really wouldn't advise that. So whilst you can get EE to try and help you with this problem, I think the bigger problem you've got is that you need a new machine.
All right, Charles, thank you. Sorry to cut you off there, but I want to squeeze in Neil as well in Blackburn. Hello, Neil.
Oh, hi, Clive. Hi.
Hi, Neil.
What would you like to say?
Yeah, just say, well, first of all, Clive, you're bringing some superb experts on your programme, including Fezzy. Where have you been, Fezzy?
Well, what's your question, Neil? Because we're running up to the news.
I've got a Samsung S7.
Yep.
Okay, Fezzy, and I dropped it about a month ago.
Yep.
And there's no problem. I mean, it still works, but there's a crack slightly on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm not one of these. I mean, but I can't actually get the when I'm putting the, you know, text in or whatever on it. It's making it not work correctly, right? So I'm going to have to change it, right? So I don't buy a new one, so I bought this 2 years old. Well, 2 years after the technology comes out. I always buy the old technology, which is good. So I'm just asking, what is... I didn't get a lot of new ones. For about £200, some foreign ones or something to a mobile phone.
Yeah, well, the Galaxy S21 is about to be launched any day now. So this is if you're familiar with Samsungs and you had a good experience with them, then I would tend to stick with the Samsung and just look at one of the later models. So you've got the S7, you could go a number of generations forward, get a good deal, and particularly, as I say, because there's a new generation just about to come out, so all the others will shuffle down in price and a lot of people will be selling off their old ones and upgrading. So I would look for that. I'd try and go for a retailer that still offers you some sort of warranty, even if it's like 90 days or something, just to make sure that you get it home and it's working properly. I would also say to you that, you know, I understand what you say about buying older machines, but there are new budget machines available. For example, the Google Pixels, which are great. You know, Google make Android, which is the operating system that runs. The Pixels are a good choice. There are other brands that do budget and medium level devices, and they are brand new. And the reason why it's important, particularly with Android phones, is Android phones are not typically very good at supporting the machine with updates of the operating system. Some of them, the good ones, will give you 2 or 3 years. A lot of them won't even give you 1 year. And so when you get an older Android-based machine, you may find that you can't get any updates to it, and that can be problematic from a security and function point of view. So my advice to you would be to buy an entry-level new phone, okay, and look at the Google Pixels and so forth, and just decide what, you know, there are Huawei's and so forth, but look at the Google Pixels and see if you can afford to buy a new basic machine, because a new basic machine will be running a current operating system and you'll get updates for it for longer than a used machine.
All right, there we are, Neil. Thank you very much. Very quick question here from Brett as well. Why has Microsoft given up on Windows for mobile phones? I've got a Nokia Lumia smartphone. Half the websites don't work. Is it time to get a new phone?
Yes, it is. I used to really love Microsoft for phone, Windows for phone, I beg your pardon. It was a great mobile operating system, but they came to the party rather late and they couldn't compete with Android and iOS from Apple. So they had to withdraw, which is a real shame because they had a good product, but they were just too late to market with it. But yes, so it is a time to get a new one because, again, you will not be getting any updates to that device, which means that it will have vulnerabilities that go unfixed.
Brilliant advice. Thank you very much indeed, Fevzi. We didn't even have time to talk about the gadgets of the year, so hopefully we'll get you back on before the end of the year and you can just tell us about all of those marvellous gadgets and what we can look forward to in 2021.